Okay. Well, what you'll be doing this afternoon, if you bring up your agenda, is go briefly through the standardization strategy, then Pat Hayes is going to talk about content, and then we will look forward to the work plan and the next steps. Unless everybody is in complete agreement with the draft charter, we'll probably take notes on the changes and then circulate the revised result. But if you can click on the slides for the standardization strategy, it'll take you briefly through the selection of an appropriate standardization organization. I'm going to invite James to talk about OASIS, which is kind of a hint of the organization that we're recommending. And then we'll just confirm that everyone's happy with that approach and then look at the individual charter. When we as a team looked at selecting the standards organisation, we really felt that whatever we're going to produce is going to be derived content from the existing standards and the other sources. While we could have gone down our own route as an organisation, those standards development organisations have already got the IPR policies and approvals, so we can carry on and use those rather than wasting time and doing our own. There's a very strong support for the results being electronic, rather useless if it wasn't, publicly available, free of charge and unconstrained. Now, that gives a slight problem with organisations like ISO and IEC because your national bodies insist they charge the standards in order to fund their operations, although some of the electronic forms that are out there are publicly available free of charge. We looked at a number of options which didn't go forward. We thought about taking this to the group that are responsible for the VIM, but they don't have many ontologists. The Bureau itself gave a very negative response when we actually suggested they might want to participate in some of the telephone calls. A learned professor basically told us not to waste his time because it was all sorted out and we didn't have any clear objectives. We looked at the technical committee that I chair because that has a rapid process for taking the standard straight into ISO, but it doesn't provide the framework for development if you're going to do that that approach. Similarly, there's a joint technical committee between ISO and IEC, which has fast track, but it's even more difficult because you have to get yourselves approved as a submitting body before you go through the harvesting process. W3C could be interested. Its link to ISO is through JTC1 and we're running into the same problem. OMG is felt to be too difficult. UNC fact, well, data models is fun for them, ontology is forget it.
What's the problem with UNC?
Effectively, there's no ontology capability. They're just starting to recognize data models.
And they have enormous overhead with how they do data models. You don't want to get ahead of the field with.
So, characteristics that led us to recommend OASIS is the ability to have the specifications open on the web. It has a range of different IPR policies. Good links into ISO, a number of committees, also on the MONG and the Semantic Web. The downside is that we'll have to create our own technical committee. That's tell us how difficult that isn't. You do need to be able to have identify OASIS members to support the work. It does have the advantage that individual organisations and companies, rather than national bodies, can participate directly. That's why, by the way, we use it for support of one of the ISO standards in industrial data, CLCS. Before we go on to the charter, Jamie, would you like to say a few words about Oasis?
Certainly, although not too many. This is Jamie Clark, and I'm on the Oasis professional staff. Most of you actually have encountered us before, so a tendentious representation of how TC is set up probably isn't necessary. Let me instead sort of mention the tactical issues. The tactical issues are that you need a charter. You need a small number of Oasis members who support it at the outset. I believe just on the table when knowing who's everybody got that critical mass. You need to have a scope that you're happy with, which is, of course, what this is about. In any organization, you're going to run into costs, and yes, people have to join Oasis to contribute so they can be in our membership agreement. But the fact is, as a practical matter, we have rather low and probably foolishly affordable academic and individual membership, so it's generally not a problem for people, at least from an economic point of view. I should probably also add, as long as I'm talking about standards and economics, because this is a rule of mine, that Oasis has very much drifted over time to the asynchronous remote install model. I have to say, I think that a lot of our organizations are still very much stuck in the bring six packs of people to a meeting mode. For one thing, they tend to play games with how many people they can put into a meeting, as if the group is louder and something better. For another thing, they're highly reliant on travel budgets or, you know, sponsored people who can afford the travel budget. That's not a good global result. That's not a very inclusive result. Frankly, even with large, formerly splashing out software companies, they're sort of grateful to not have to do all these things in face-to-face anymore. So we tend to be a highly remote environment that supports but does not require face-to-face meetings, and that's how we get that accessibility tone, increasingly so. Now, having said that, let me talk a little bit about IPR and contributions, because I think really the core magic of a standards process working is having a scope statement that people will subscribe to. One thing that requires agreement on what you're going to go do and put some time into, but in Oasis, the scope statement is CC constrained. It is essentially the entry agreement under which people join the work. Another way of saying that is, if you're going to commit a person to go spend time playing with a TC in that scope, the TC can't go outside that scope, and therefore your risk of having your resource wasting time on something you don't care about, or if you're proprietary, your risk of having your resource give away stuff from your organization that they're not supposed to give up, or that's supposed to support things that don't go towards your goals, is constrained by that scope. And the converse of that is that under our IPR policy, when people are in the room, they and their organizations that put them there are committing to provide whatever their contributions are to the TC for the purpose of doing more or less whatever they want with it, as long as it stays within that scope. So you have sort of an automatic IPR cleaning process that occurs by virtue of our membership agreement. There are four different modes. We actually still have one or two TCs that operate in a royalty-bearing mode. There are industries where royalties still matter. The mode that your proposers have suggested we use here is our rather newer license-free mode, where everybody who comes in to the TC simply agrees to give a non-assertion covenant, which is as much as saying, if we have anything, you're free to use it. That relieves participants of the problem of digging too deeply in their patent portfolios or other interests, as long as they're willing to say, well, whatever this TC is with, should we have anything that constrains it in the way of intellectual property, you're welcome to it. So that's about as good as you can get for an outcome that is, as the outset is intended to produce a freely available work without restrictions. The last thing I'm going to say about IPR and contributions is that assuming you have a group of people willing to participate, and assuming that their work goes into the committee, and assuming that they therefore have given us the permission to use it, and then the committee issues something, and then the general Oasis non-assertion covenant applies to the outgoing work, and you have a standard approved, as Howard alluded to, we're known for playing nicely and sharing our toys. You generally do send this stuff onward to other organizations where it will fit with the standards magisterium. Now, whether that's ISO or ISO and some other things in this case is an interesting issue for future development, I guess. I would think it is ISO. because they have the same MSI. Although whether that's now an IEC thing, whether there are other stakeholders, you know, that's sort of regard that as a problem for future generations 6 months from now. But we haven't, will again take away some standards and happily send them out. Our view is essentially that they are like having college age children. If you do your job well, your standards go out to find their unfortunate and very people you don't like and occasionally send you holiday cards. And then, you know, that means they're out there being successful being used. So I think that's probably the right paradigm for something like this. I'd be happy to answer questions if anybody has them.
I have a question. Evan missed. I guess the bigger concern I would have for this group is the inverse of the problem you described. And I assume that this has already been discussed, so you probably have a good answer. That is, we're getting input from a number of international standards organizations. What do we do about their IP holdings on those things?
Three things.
One.
Anything that's not an OASIS member. And I think you'd find that if we ever told ISO, you know, ISO wants to join OASIS, there'd be convulsions of confusion about what that would even mean. So let's not even try and go down that road. ANSI, et cetera.
But they all have
a third IPR firm. They generally have terms that state that things are freely available or available for use, but not for reprinting. And there's things you can work with. And it has been our experience that when we have something like a knockoff of an ISO or ANSI or INSITE or BSI standard, there has not been any problem with us securing confirmation from those authorities that our CC is welcome to elaborate, profile, to, you know, I mean, it's a different thing to reuse, restate, and transform SI than to, you know, to create a new SI that's in competition with the old one. So in general cases, I wouldn't expect a problem as long as we do a little work to make sure they know what we're doing and we hold their hands and say, we're not reinventing the grease galvan on you. We're just creating restatements and re-expressions of it that still look to what you got in 80,000 as it's been. I don't anticipate a problem. But the other thing I should say that's sort of related to that is it's not uncommon for them to say, we're great with that, but we'd really like you to tell us that you'll send the work back to us. So I think part of what you expect out of a TC in OASIS when it started is that we'd have a conversation with the TC at the outset that says, let's make sure that we're going to send this stuff to, for example, I said we say so, and like to make sure that the TC also makes the commitment that if it creates any elaborations that are of value to whatever it is we're profiling or extending or considering, that those also will be by agreement of TC donated back to the source where it came from. So there's sort of a two-way exchange. And finally, I guess I should mention as a stopgap, we also have a public review process. So there is a way for people who do not want to engage the TC to toss in their stuff free of commitments and make it available to TC. We're not gated by only taking in comments from people who are members of the OASIS TC. So that helps as well.
So, Frank Olkin from NSF. One question I have is, I know W3C publishes all its standards in XHTML, and my impression is that ISO ingests them as a particular, actually very elaborate, word style document, a huge file of word macros. I know we're anticipating that we will come out of this with, at the very least, an OWL document, maybe a CLIF document, but there'll presumably also be something that has text in it. And so, and the question is, what's the publishing process at OASIS, and what kind of formats or file formats and things do you guys want to see this in, or do you care?
I could tell you, but we do have some. I could tell you simply that it's not a problem because we've taken out a number of rather elaborate schema and things. Sometimes I will call it code, although it's not. Sometimes the XML is the spec. Sometimes it's supplied as a codicil of the spec. Let me also point out that we have one of the world's best known serial victims of those publishing processes standing behind you at the podium there. How are you? If you tolerate both the OASIS and the ISO publication processes, did your best to break both of them over the years out of the step.
And I would say succeeded, because all our step standards published through ISO are delivered and published in HTML with electronic inserts in our Express format and various other structures. So there's no actual barrier in that ISO published. We have all our standards are written in XML, and we run a script that generates HTML, which they publish as an integrated file set. No problem.
The most common form is a narrative that is something that is work in an HTML document accompanied by what I would call code snippets, although you're really talking about feature schema. That is, we however also have specifications and final standards where the definitive representation is not in W3C sense, but small HTML schema, or for that matter, several accent G or something else. And we have some now evolving where the UML is actually designated as a definitive. So there's not a problem with that in our process. I'm more worried about how we could help ISO deploy this stuff eventually in view of their standards and databases work, to tell you the truth. I think that will be an interesting challenge over time. How can this where will the definitive copies of this be lodged from for our stakeholders here, maybe? But from a specification editing point of view, it's not going to be a problem.
We've already agreed how to do our HTML files using standards and databases, so we actually provide an HTML library comprising 600 HTML components, each their own structured file. And it's causing a few bits of consternation in ICOCS, but that seems to be blazing trend.
Hardy, in your case, yes, the consumption of the HTML itself is actually conformance, right?
Oh, the HTML is the standard itself. The conformance is done against the Express data model, which is the electronic insert.
Okay. So the electronic insert is the normative piece for you.
Right.
If I go to ISO and buy step, if I don't download the electronic insert, I'm not.
You get that free. You can also get the latest version of that free from the site. I'm kind of stretching the ISO business model a bit. We tend not to follow that from the rooftop. From that point of view,
naming individual cases, yes, we send stuff on to other organizations and they charge for them and we leave them available for free, and this business model mystifies us.
Right. You leave them for free before anything, before it has been enhanced. Let's say it has been enhanced under the auspices of ISO.
That is typically the case, but also we did a good example, although it's far afield from this where it works, is the open document standard. We're in a complex negotiated iterative loop with JGT1, wherein we send them, they send us literally comments, we take them on. You know, at the end of the day, there are synchronization loops, the result of which there's always two matching versions, one of which has the status over there and one of which is available for free over here. And if somebody wants to, if somebody's government feels better about implementing one that they have to pay ISO for, go with God.
There is.
That's what I'm saying. That is possible to do.
What we have done also is I chair of the PC in LATIS, Jerry Smith. And they have authority from ISO to use the ISO standard in creation of derivative work. some of those may eventually, if we can sort the business model, get passed back to ITO for adoption. But the key thing in all of this is not the level of detail, it's a question of ensuring we know what we're going to produce. The mechanism here really is to pull together a charter.
May I say one thing about that, Howard? When you look at the charter, considerations we were discussing this morning, which are what should be included, what is valid to include, what's excluded for practical purposes, what should be excluded for logical purposes, that's one set of issues. But another set of charter issues is that, frankly, your charter exists in the ceremony to bring people to play in the project, or not. And so to the extent you can say, no, we're not going to redo your thing, or yes, we are going to take your thing into account and give you the opportunity to map to it. The charter is the open letter by which you're essentially enticing these other stakeholders to play by defining the boundaries in a way that seems like it's going to be agreeable and lead to harmonization. And I think as we go through the charter, that's what should be in the back of our minds.
The next one is, while I was at this week, I actually was invited to consider passing this on to W2C, the fact that we're going to publish anthologies, there's a definite virtue in doing so. There are ways to make an extended Oasis, dialogue, as well as a W2C standard, being the same one with different numbers.
And if I can just answer it, we've done that too. It's not clear to me what value there is to having the letters W3C on it, unless somebody's particularly in love with that with respect to his... I mean, W3C is a fine organization for doing certain things. It seems to me that if there is some view that says ontologies are going to be primarily published in W3C, it's a very misguided viewpoint. Because if they're to be successful, they have to be published by people who know what the hell they're doing. And most of them probably don't give a damn about web services or even the semantic web. And I think that's really one of the issues.
Going through more than one of these processes. That's
not being affected by
okay.
My last point actually is for cats. I understand common logic has fought its way and got it sort of available as an ISO standard without having people to pay. Can you tell us how?
No, Harry DeLuca is the policy with the ISO. He took on the whole business of dealing with the ISO.
During the process, the documents that we'll be working on will be available on the Track server and in a variety of formats. I mean, we have my plan was to be able to work in some kind of markdown text syntax or some kind of restructured text, and then through an automated process be able to produce HTML and PDF files and that kind of thing for people to consume, you know, for them to look at the status of how this group is doing and what kinds of changes and things people are making. So that was just a comment.
Maybe I should respond to that. The gentleman on the phone is already sounding like an editor to be, which is always a nice thing to hear when you're a bunch of people who are hoping someone will be your editor. I do want to note, though, that one of the things you get in any standards organization is the standards organization will require that the material be posted to a freely available website controlled by the standards organization. This is primarily to make sure that any one party doesn't change their mind and walk away with the goods. So as a standards cop, I will express friendly, non-committal reaction to everything that the gentleman has said about where stuff would live and what would be definitive and who would be managing. That would be up to the committee would connive people into editing by smiling at them generously and offering them lots of future karma. Then they'd have to put up with the fact that a lot of the work would be done on people's individual machines but would need to necessarily be downloaded to a definitive space controlled by a neutral.
Yeah, I would expect this to be, you know, the working documents and things are one thing, but the actual definitive version would be somewhere else, I would expect.
I mean even the working documents. Under the Oasis price, just as Peter keeps all of his stuff in the Nightfall 73.net place where everybody can find it again and doesn't disappear, even Oasis, with whom he shares some genetics going back 10 years or so, has a website and everything gets uploaded there, all the email is there, it is posted, it is public, the working drafts get posted. That's how we make sure that these projects don't get railroaded. We have to work that one out. And part of the protection you get going to a standards organization is you're using the neutral site as a record.
Same thing happens with W3C.
And OMG and anybody else, really.
Yeah, so what are we using locally as your pet editing tool? We have to extract it into
I mean, I think go further than that because this is almost not a standards conversation at all, but let me just say it. Many XML projects have run aground on the rocks of tool issues. So when you say, aha, we have chosen a tool. That's such a horribly prescient phrase. They don't necessarily think it's a wrong choice. They should be aware that, I mean, for example, we have a UDL committee who is churning out XML schema right and left, and Mike Guster for the heck fellas. And they're being used in commerce, and they're currently legislated and mandated for use in part of Europe to fulfill some of their requirements. So, you know, the economically correct is a concern. They decided some time ago they're going to standardize on one particular tool. You know, they found XML Spy or something like that. They said, right, this is our baby. And if it works, if it's canonical XML, has some, you know, odd editing choices that are not like anybody else's, we're going to go with that. The tool is the outcome. So you'll get to a point where in a search process, at a way to work anywhere else, you'll have to make decisions about exactly what the gentleman is saying, which tool are we using, and what are we going to do with these limitations. And that will be a serious issue for the committee to consider, just as you'll have to grope around with, you know, UML production rules for creation of those charts.
If there are no other questions for Jamie on OASIS, we have to pose the question, are we frank?
Does OASIS maintain like a subversion server or something else like this? I gather there's very different strategies for dealing with the draft documents, but
we have basically anything that people think they need that we don't have, we let them do. And we have a number of committees that are on CMS, not necessarily subversion. We have a number of them that are actually working in wikis. I'm not kidding, but I mean, those are not really working in wiki. We have several different trackers. We have some people who want to do it. The other thing I think we've ever said no to, actually, strangely enough, is SourceForge, because SourceForge comes with a bunch of sticky ITR terms that are of its own devising. With step in SourceForge, it's a different requirement. You're doing it instead of becoming pregnant with their ITR rules, which includes GPL stuff or GPL-like stuff. So yes, we have CCs using CMS. I think there's at least one using subversion, but I have to look. We don't usually host it, but it's possible.
So does that mean, for example, we're going to use subversion, you don't host subversion, that means we could cover CC,
get a resource and talk to our, this is the person who is my successor as director of standards, to make sure that she thinks that it's, you know, in a public location where everybody can find it, and we go away tomorrow and it has appropriate access control, so you know that you're not, you know. We certify the use of those outside resources as A, not something we already do easily in-house, and B, as being reasonably fair and acceptable to CC, so that doesn't create political issues.
I guess that don't answer. Not that kill.
Okay.
Very well. Be that you should be using right now.
Okay, but the other alternative would be that OASIS would get a copy of the version. I mean, I assume that particularly if it's open source, it's not a...
I'll do this offline.
Well,
the question is, who's we? I mean, I think there's an issue here. That Joel went to some length to set up things that he thought would be of service to the group, and obviously there's going to be a problem of some kind with how that relates to the OASIS work. And it seems to me that either we will trust Joel and OASIS to work this out, or we will have five more cooks in the same broth. Okay? And that's really what I'm trying to figure out here. I mean, it seems to me that either you're going to pick somebody and let him work out how it's going to get done, or you decide that it's going to be a committee activity and however many people want to be involved in that activity get involved.
And for what it's worth, we have inherited a number of projects already underway in similar circumstances in the past, and have never seemed to have a problem with subsuming, inheriting, or somehow agglomerating those resources without causing a lot of disruption. So I must say, it's very weird about its access control. I would be surprised if it was a problem.
And besides, you can always pull stuff out and dump the instances over to OASIS anyway. Nicola has put his hand up.
Yes, thank you. Since there's already been some work in this area that we did in the context of the CCNL specification of the OMG, I'm wondering whether you folks have some ideas or suggestions for coordinating the ongoing work that is still happening at the OMG on QEDB with the work that you're proposing to do in the auspices of OASIS. And in particular, I'd rather avoid the situation where, for example, we have a duplication of work or duplication of, you know, there's, you know, the CSML, you know, the QDV in CSML, and then there's the OSS, I don't know what you would call it, UOM or something, and the two may be different, or they might be very similar, but not necessarily quite the same. And instead of, you know, duplicating or fragmenting or multiplying essentially the same things, it seems that it would be good if we could figure out whether there's a possibility of coordinating the two organizations at least.
I think if we can answer that very quickly in order to move on, as part of the charter, we identify the organizations we need to deal with, and it's up to the committee to establish the necessary processes.
While we're on the same subject, Nicholas, is there some hints of us and hints of maybe some person at OMG that we might talk this over?
I think, yes, probably Roger might confirm this if he's still there, but I think Andrew Watson, who's the, I think, the technical director of the OMG, would be the right person to talk to make sure that at least you should know whether there's any precedent for coordinating work between the ONG and OASIS, and if not, then how would we have to go about it, whether it's possible from the ONG point of view.
Jamie is about to give a positive answer.
Yeah. You want more than that?
Seriously.
One thing you can show the folks at CML is the charter. It comes out if they're not. Another thing you can give them one to involve in the UNLization portal for, I hope I didn't miss what that word there. Representation of UNL. Third, we should look as with some of the other instances, all that's been identified. That is there after the original publication. So we should find out whether there's any issue with their content being aggregated and whether they have any problem with the idea that there's anything unique to their sub-ontological list, whether there's any reason why a project like this couldn't use it to map to it. Mapping the thing doesn't trigger IPR, frankly, although that's a very, very rough statement.
And besides, one we started this project from Ontology Summit 2009, actually, during the preparation of Ontology Summit 2009, OMG was the co-sponsor with Richard Marksoli and Lisa Temple and Wallace representing that camp, and presumably we have that blessing, so that we have that experience. I want to see if there are easier ways to make this transition totally painless.
Okay, does that finish your input, Nicholas, or is there another one?
No, it didn't.
Okay, Joel?
Yeah, no, just to go back to the previous point that's on my plate, I'd be happy to work with somebody at OASIS. If you could give that contact information to Peter and either have it in the chat room or part of the transcript somewhere, then I'd be happy to follow up and find out what's going on. But I reserve the right to pull the rest of the committee along with me if I run into any issues.
Absolutely. Thank you, Roger.
Picking up where Nicholas left off, I think actually there are very few barriers to integrating the work that we've done with SysML into this process and vice versa. I actually chair the SysML revision task force, and as I mentioned first thing this morning, we viewed this as a bridge to the evolving international standards such as ISO 80000, and I would view this ontology form of those models the same way. Also, it's worth mentioning both Lisa Kendall and Evan Wallace are they share the effort on the ontology definition meta model, and we actually are considering using this quantities model to showcase some of the capabilities we think are needed to map across these different forms of models. The OMG process is controlled by the membership, and so it's just up to those of us who are participating, and we already have good cross-participation, so I think we can definitely work through those. And all we have to do for system knowledge is make sure we can repackage the models and libraries so that they're available in the specific UML form that system realizing.
Roger, Andrew told me yesterday afternoon that probably the critical aspect of this from the OMG point of view is that the original submitters basically hold the real rights and OMG nearly shares them. So if the SysML developers agree, then OMG couldn't care less.
Actually, the original SysML submitters gave an even more permissive license to republish and create derivations of the original work. So,
welcome to the 21st century.
Yes.
Okay. Before we move on to the question, Nicholas, has it come up again?
Yes, so just to simply say that Pat Hayes a while ago mentioned that he would be working on developing a common logic version of this ontology, and in the same spirit that Hans-Peter did an R version of the QEDV prior to the to us being able to actually apply the OBM mapping to translate the QEDV UML to the QEDV now, if Pat would be interested, would like to use also the common logic version of, for example, QDV or something, you know, resemble to that, to in fact verify that we can reconstruct this based on the ODM mappings, and if the ODM mappings need to be updated, then so do, and file the corresponding issues.
I'd be interested in looking into that. The last time I looked at the ODM connection with Common Logic, the mappings were more syntactic than semantic, which could still be extremely useful. And I certainly think that just as with the Common Logic spec itself, we should at some point try and align whatever we do in Common Logic with the rest of ODM. I'm not sure if the tool would be useful at the beginning of the process.
Not at the beginning, but if, for example, you were to develop a common logic version, say,
on this one, because otherwise we're going to run out of time.
Let's take it offline and talk about it in more depth.
Right.
We are in a state where we're running a little late on the agenda to go through the charter in detail. But first of all, are we all broadly happy that OASIS is the route to go? Do I hear any dissent? Hearing none, let it be so. What we've done is to put together a draft charter, which I did intend to go through in a bit of detail, but I'm going to scan through quickly and highlight the specific actions that we need to take. First, and probably the most contentious item, standard template for the charter, is what do we want to call it? Version than Fonseca and Unit of Measure Ontology Standard, so I was great. go for the word in PC, draft to an owl, and if based on the quality of the unit information and quantities, publicly available free of charge. The development of a single or federated ontology which covers the fundamental and derived unit measure of the defensive sector, as we said in that stuff. Question. Do we want to include in that any rules to use, like recommendation 20?
What do you mean?
UNECE says that you're going to use this set of units for cross-border trade. It's a business rule issue. Would we wish to include that?
I urge strongly not. I don't think that is our business. They say who should use the argument for what purpose of that system.
The question is whether we want to formulate that U.S. rule.
I'm not sure that
put polish on the cannonball.
Okay, sure.
right. We've added the QUDV portion of SysML in here. Deliverables with completion dates as part of the planning exercise that's in the after the next session. We've got proposal in here that the IPR mode is the non-assertion mode, and that's what the rules actually say.
The non-assertion mode is what I described earlier today. It's an elective choice of the TC what constraints to put around inputs from the people participating in the committee. And the constraint here is if you walk in this room and open your mouth, you are not going. Not only are you not going to charge royalties, more than that, you're not going to require a written license. You're simply agreeing that you will just serve any rights you might have, whatever they may be, against whoever uses this thing.
Apart from boasting rights.
Members have waived your rights to any material that is actually published.
Say again?
Membership in the TC waived your rights to any material that is published by the TC.
That's approximately right. It's a little narrower than that because people might be off and doing other things, but essentially it says, I won't attack anybody who implements the final version of the standard. Whatever else I do with it is progress.
A anticipated audience, developers, their information models require an analytic question. Question do we
want to talk
about?
We'll go beyond information models, at least I hope it would. I mean, the UNFNL folks, for example, are expecting it to be able to design a document model.
Sort of following along in the style of what the UNFNL people were originally.
We are really talking about the market of documents with improved search platform that you recognize references. Information models that rolled in a term that covered that.
I think we should be marked. If you want to be more explicit, type right, what are the words?
Document markup model. Developers.
Or use the application. How about
any to be applicable to any situation?
I was thinking we should also add persons who wish to use this as the basis for data exchange markup.
We worked on with this offline.
Absolutely.
I'm just gathering the ideas.
We need to
rewrite this in some way and get this kind of flow to move in the direction.
So you skipped over a section that was talking about dimensions. I think dimensions is an ambiguous word that only those of us very familiar with SI understand what it meant. I think since this is for a broader audience, that we should be clear about quantity kind, somehow have some layman's accessible word that we can use to explain that.
Yeah, I got to fight about that before you came in.
Do feel free to come up with some additional text. I think there's a process check on this. Having seen it, had the discussion, we'll take over a couple of weeks comments on the charter before we go live. We're going to rewrite F1F. And comments on all of these, please, to, I think, Peter, to add to the focus. Language for conducting business. Can you bring me into English? Standardization with an S, guys. Come on. Then we have some non-normative information. Yeah. So work on UnitML. We need to cover BIPM, derive units, Are there any other user organizations we need to pick up? I think we've added OMG to that, haven't we?
What I might say is that the best of all possible worlds to achieve the pheromonal goal I was actively seek liaison as appropriate to the teaching.
Actively.
Because they can't say, well, you don't even know we exist.
I am a little bit concerned about how constrained we might be by that model.
Which one?
Recommendation 20.
I don't think we're offering to be constrained by it. I think we're just offering to use it as one piece.
Okay, good.
As data.
That's what I was hoping.
That would probably therefore ought to put it in there.
I'm glad to see it not there, actually. It's mentioned earlier.
As one of the many two boxes in which bunches of statements of units that are of some meaning to somebody reside.
Okay, so we need to update the 22 EA stuff.
Yeah, I just list them all, frankly. I just say anybody who's gotten who's an owner of that, I mean, include whatever TC it is that in ISO that owns not just 80,000 now, but also the IC unit and wherever it is that the JTC one work is going. Why not let them all have liaisons?
Okay.
We'll need a bigger table.
You know what? Three out of four, they don't show up. But you've offered it. They're on the subscription list. We make such arrangements as they're necessary so they know what we're doing, and then you remove the right to object.
Okay. We then come into some other basic items. Frank.
Many of the W3C committees have a requirement that they publish some sort of updated version of the draft standard every 6 months, I think it is, or something like that. And the question is, do we want the time-based release of draft, essentially? And the question is, not final, just, so that people not deeply involved in the committee can have some place to go and look periodically to see what it is that these people are creating and do they care. And I've been on both sides. I've been, we've had to scramble to meet those deadlines on occasion. On the other hand, it is something of a incentive and B, some way of letting the world know what going on. So the question is, do we want some provision, and if so, at what quantum?
May I? Speaking as a member of the W3CAC, from way who joined them, that was the simplest way to get along with them. That's usually called the heartbeat requirement, and it's often used to, test whether there is, in fact, something more than Karen Quinlan going on in the committee. I had never really thought of the transparency thing. In a way, since you don't need that, because all drafts and all emails are publicly archived, so anybody who cares to look and see as much as they care to see at all times, it's all done out in the sunlight. Having said that, OASIS rules also have a sort of heartbeat rule, but it goes to a committee that doesn't meet for 6 months, something like that. So I would be surprised if you ran afoul of that rule. But see, a lot of it's member only.
No, there is some, though.
It's the good stuff.
No, actually not. But I mean, there is a channel. And so it could happen there, but it doesn't really.
No, no, no not comment.
An
outfit.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah, some of them are better at flushing things out than others. Having said that, though, for purposes of what we're doing here, I mean, I don't think you need anything like that, Frank, is the answer here.
Okay.
I do think you're right, though, that there should be some sort of regular working draft publication. I don't even want to schedule that. That's one of these things we can take it on as a management resource.
Right. Having said that, let's talk about the life cycle concerns you might have. You might want to put into the charter. Do you want to say that
is the sentiment of the people who join the TC. Because at the end of the day, when they're done with this, that they will be their work effort, you know, it's finally approved as an OASIS standard, that they will ask OASIS to send it to, you know, as appropriate to ISO or something like that. Or do you want to just leave that as an issue for the committee?
That's an issue for the committee, given the debate we had today.
Okay.
The other things we need to put in the charter, and I'm just going to run through them quickly now because we really need to look at deliverables and work plan in the later part of the meeting before we fill them in. When do we want to hold the first meeting? And there are specific rules. Not less than 30 days, not less than 45 days. The announcement. So we need to work out when we start. What the project? What do we need to do with the meeting schedule? Who are the OASIS members who support this? That isn't available on that link. We need to ensure that we need five eligible persons from OASIS organizational members, and we need to also highlight the primary reps from those organizations. We need to identify the convener.
Yeah.
There's no member section, and there's again a list of anticipated contributions. That's about the course we have.
We'll probably want to work that one more. I suspect some of those will prove not to be contributions, but rather are simply things that you will, you know, operate with an eye to. I mean, for example, I wouldn't expect recommendation 20 to be contributed into the committee.
Or any of the eyes or
something. But again, I think that's wiki work. Or not something to worry about today.
I suppose we don't put together an FAQ. And, oh, there's the name again.
Yes, JPL is a member of OASIS I believe it's Jeff Estefan who's the representative.
That's right. Do you think that, first of all, do you want to nominate yourself as a participant, and do you think OEL will do that?
In this particular context, since it is distinctly relevant to the work I'm doing at OMG on the system LQDV, yes, I'd rather be the representative to maintain continuity and avoid spending time to explain myself too much. But indeed, that would be simple. I would have to consult with Jeff Estefan about this.
Yeah, that'd be great if you can populate that, Nikolai. That'll solve our liaison problem, too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is there any color about people like me who are neither me nor my organization? Is that a bar? My being involved in
it?
Some checking for a large commercial organization. I think as a contributor member, it's like $8,000 a year. We're not currently members of Voice.
We have NIST, we have JPL, we have Carnegie Mellon.
Liaison between OASIS and OMG can provide a channel for participation. OMG is not listed as a liaison member, but they are listed as a contributor member.
Well, the good news is that we're always in touch with Richard, God knows. The bad news is that wouldn't be a way for somebody who's an OMG member to get in the back door by saying, well, I'll be the liaison and then I'll be the participant also.
David Price of Eurostep is heavily involved in OMG.
So we
certainly want to have NIST, JPL, Eurostep.
CMU is a maybe. NIST, JPL, PAE.
PAE is a question mark.
CMU, question mark.
But you only need two.
We only need two, but we need five people.
So we need five people. That's not a problem. Yes, but it's not a problem. You have to be a member.
Is LBNL a member of OIS?
I'm pretty sure it is.
Eurostep is listed as a contributor member.
Yeah, we know.
They would be. Okay, if you tell me who I need to talk to at LBL, I can.
I work at LBL. I go to LBL.
You're bad at hard life.
Okay, so the names we can put on the charter are NIST, JPL, Eurostep, subject to confirmation of him on the phone. And the challenge here.
Real income that you find it here with your role, these people in ontology that you use something for private practice.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need to get the approval of the primary member. That you can find also on the ISO website. The Oasis website. From Anagram.
If I understand the situation,
that you've just recently told us, and yeah, I do through.
Well, actually, it's expensive for individuals, right?
I have to have buy myself an individual entry or resign, in which case I will resign.
I have
a
basically January 15th meeting was purely telepathic, or we also want partial physical realization, in which case it's doable. I can see them getting it.
I don't actually have anything on my agenda other than to start talking about the actual content and clarify some of the issues. We crashed through the most contentious one, I think, this morning at some length, which inevitably happens whenever it comes up. I think if anybody's got anything to say, first of all, do we want to do this now? at 3:45. You want to take another break and move over? What are we going to do? We're so far behind schedule.
If I may make a suggestion, please, what you do want to do at a minimum is you want to have a planned finalization of this document via the wiki and further conversation. And it may be that the way this works is somebody sticks a lawman listed literals into the next draft and then you handle it. Yes. Is there anything that he said about what that's likely to be? I mean, you had the English draft, and then an OWL model and a UML model was put on the table today. Is there anything like just being able to talk about it off my stack. I should be able to use the control in the next couple of weeks. Thanks for that. It would be sort of semi-English common logic. It would know it's the same point. I think it would enable the content discussion rather better than we can possibly do when we read all we have is that excellent but UML diagram, and that's all we've got at the moment. I don't want to give the impression that I'm blowing this on the agenda, but I run into this, but it's a very good time now. I think that might work better. Right. I think it's the group in general, including anybody who might still be listening. Anybody who's got say on any of these topics, please say them in email to me and to the group, but certainly to me. And if said things involve my having read some document, include a live point of the document where I can read it. Don't simply refer to it and then I discover I have to pay thousands of dollars to even find out what the title is.
Well, in particular, I think we need the QUDV online.
The OWL?
The OWL
version we will have within a couple of days. Yeah. Okay.
The one
big hole for me is the actual whatever it is, 8 million now, 8,000 documents I cannot get hold of. Maybe I don't need
to. I can probably
remember what I do. Yeah. We can obviously but I understand.
There's an action for Oasis to request a copy from ISO to be for the purposes of development of an ontology.
I'm quite happy to sign another.
What we have done with the PLCF document, there's the members side of the website. We put it on their password, and then you just let people know what the password is. Just don't see. And I thought I was happy with that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm not crazy about it. It's just a matter of getting to the bottom.
Password protected section of the document.
So it's request from ISO a copy of the latest 80/IEC 80000 for the purposes of standards development. We need to specify whether the FOA is concerned. The question needs to go to Mike Smith.
And those documents are cash cows for ISO. Those are ones that are bought all the time.
Okay.
This is Roger. On the QUDV model, I already included a link through the agenda links to the public wiki page where the annex containing the QUDV model is available, as well as the initial OWL draft.
Yes, I think the OWL draft is there as well.
Yes, it's a sublink from that page.
Okay. Question then comes to what are we going to deliver?
We want to take a break and then come back at 3 minutes.
What do people want to do? Can we take 5 and then come back on this?
Yeah, I think that was
okay. What will be continuing after a break?
Break here and then go. Somebody on the phone got their phone left on and is, I guess, walking out in the street or holding another meeting. If you could mute, that would be good. Thank you.
Excuse me, now that you brought that topic up, I'm an independent consultant. I'm a volunteer. Do you mind if I stay or would you like to?
It's open meeting. But what was on the fact that I was going to ask you to put a large amount of written document.
Thank you.
They're busy staying dry and learning to swim. You know, they're very different perspectives on
Yeah, I'm proud of that.
Cognizant of the microphones, and Peter, if you could mute everyone on the call side to help get through the clutter and other office static that seems to be getting through, that would be great.
I just did, and I found out that that person has the number that ends in 9790, and if you know who you are, you're being muted.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we should remain quiet. Right. Final steps I think we can take today is identify the specific deliverables that we're looking for. We need to put together a work plan, and we need to shortlist somebody to convene the January meeting. What I've got noted down here with the suggested schedule in specific detail is that we need to get confirmation of supporting participants by 2 weeks on
Monday.
November. Then, Peter, would it be possible to look at finalising the charter on the 19th of November call, or is that booked already?
Right away.
Because we can then crank it out to on the announcement list and get then meet the easily meet the January deadline. We won't have the information that we need in time.
November 9th plus 28 is November 37th, so therefore it will be December 6th.
Next week.
The third
will be the fourth. The third will be the week before, so that's still working. Has to be.
We wouldn't actually have to believe beyond Thursday either.
Okay. The other items we need to put in place are
the delivery was. And as we've discussed previously, we kind of have that list in terms of the
what list are we trying to do now?
Deliverables, just to confirm that we've got the list of deliverables to go in the chart.
Now what we described here is actually a little bit different from what there is there.
And I think my
understanding was that what we were talking about for deliverables is essentially a bunch of modules,
each of which will have all four parts.
That is, there will be a module for quantity concept, which will be formalized in Cliff with a clear vowel representation that is directly derived from the Cliff and there will be UML pictures. For making it easier to present in film, and there will be elaborate English text to explain it, and there will be more elaborate English text to explain the bits. That are either idiosyncratic uses of Cliff, or more frequently, are gaps, like promissory notes, meaning this part needs to work. So we're talking about multiple modules. I think we want to explain that the architecture of a bit, if you like, we'll have all four parts, and then we will have several modules. Yes, absolutely. Do we want to just have it in modules, just me, keep my own head straight, and not get totally confused.
So we'll probably want to revise the list of deliverables, explain that the deliverable is a package of things, and then there will be this list of deliverables,
which is the multiple units that we've identified, and then for future things that might happen or not happen.
What I might suggest you do for open this on this is identify a set of core modules.
Without necessarily saying that they're quantity units,
unless you're sure that's what you want to do.
I'm not even entirely clear what the distinction would be, but what is your, that I don't do.
Oh, Ed was suggesting that explicitly you have modules for quantities, units, what was the other Z?
Well, the ones that left to mind were quantities, units, and scales.
That also leaves my mind.
And then there are these sort of optional things for particular quantities of measurement, uncertainty, and specific. And there may be some other that showed up in our list, but that's what I'm talking about. Because we talked about version, which I think goes with units, so that's not. And the purpose of these, I hate the term, level modules, is to define categories.
Would they be used in other modules as category names?
So, in another one, you would say, in an SI module, you would say that a unit.
Right. And then if you don't know what that meant, you'd go back to the unit ontology, where modules,
where there would be a far more general theory of units would or
what.
So that's the general idea. The initial ones, the ones near the core, define the terms that are then used in the other.
I was maybe looking for the explicit list, which maybe you want to propose.
I'll go along with the one that Ed said initially.
So quantities, units, scales, measurement.
Quantities, units, there's one more.
Units and scales, certainly.
I'm not sure I want to go with. Well, those are on the potential list. That was one of these issues about what the scope is. How do we do that? I mean, the point is we don't want to move them on the long term, we don't want to promise them.
I don't want to promise them for the next round of iteration. I'd like to get
the task force, the PC.
Well, it doesn't take anything more than just exactly that. It's going to say we will produce blah, 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 blah. After the first phase, or after taking into account whatever, we may also choose to produce blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, if people get it out into work and they discover sometimes later that every factor is of its own volition,
and you have to be willing to let it do that.
So you're really talking about extension of the cover measurement.
we need a little...
Well, just as we said earlier, you'll start with the essay by base, and then an extension mechanism of the derivations, and then what you bring in a bunch of other stuff to it or not is a decision you need to make at the time once they get there.
Okay, so the extension, is the extension mechanism part of your first proposal?
Oh yeah. Well, the extension mechanism is what happens. Literally, it's literally the translation. Yeah. But also, it leads on your expression of the SIs, right? I mean, they're not good if you can't apply them.
What I think we now have is
five modules, actually, that are PP and not maybe Lama. I understand quantities, units of measure, scales, SI units, and derived units. Other people have already, and we've seen them in some of our own meetings, worked out beautiful systems for describing the relationships between units within a given system.
Right.
The kinds of equations that are allowed. What I was hoping to be able to do was, as far as possible, I think first looking, it would be possible to do this fairly correctly. Just to go through that and virtually transcribe it into topology and call it a module of how to derive units from base units. And then simply appeal to that within the common logic model. I mean, I don't want to change any of that. I want to change it as little as I can, and I hope there will be very little indeed, because one can virtually. Really, it's almost a matter of just changing the syntax of the expression with the name of that in logic.
Yes.
I wonder if there should be a module called dimension. The problem is, are we going to do that thing separately? Or are they always going to be separate modules? I don't think the repackaging might happen.
Exactly.
I'm a little reluctant to commit to a fixed set of packages right now.
Right.
Because I know experience that when you start on doing this, you find that something you thought was a module actually turns to be so small it's not worth bothering. And you just copy it to the others, and that kind of thing happens.
So what was the additional module?
The notion of dimension. So I find what a dimension was.
Unrestrainedly would be to say a core set of modules covering plus an extension mechanism which may be used for subsequent extensions to cover such areas as mechanisms.
Yes. Although I've got an uncomfortable feeling that what I mean by extension mechanism is altogether simpler and cruder than what some people here might mean by it.
Yeah.
But module of that, yeah, there will be a mechanism.
Okay, so that's the basic deliverable, and then we also note that each module will comprise normative split bit, and the AL 2.0 DL, UML, and the appropriate text description.
It's not obvious that the OWL will modularize in the same way that the CLIF will.
That's
the whole point of having one normative. One is normative.
Well, but in the context, so the owl is when you're creating owl and owl.
Oh,
then when you need to resolve anything.
I think we can say this. I agree, we have to be very careful about normative versus informative.
But I think the normative one is the reference.
I have no trouble with that.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I think we shouldn't here decide on what's normative. I think you should be, that needs to be done with great delicacy further down the line. Sometimes you want to just have one sentence, not normative. Different sort of blocks, right?
Okay, let's bring in the outside. Hans Peter, then Roger. Hans Peter, are you muted?
Is the phone system working? I haven't heard anybody on the phone for a while.
There were a handful I was still here. This is Roger.
Okay.
Along with quantities and units, a system of quantities and system of units actually give a natural way to structure some of these modulars, some of these modules. It is an important part of organizing it, even from a user point of view, not just the detached elements, but how you actually can organize them into a self-contained, complete set of related quantities and related units.
Yeah, Roger, as long as we have changed this from a list of nominal modules to a core set that we'll cover, then yes, we can put this other list of topics in there, which includes derivation and conversion and systems of units and systems of quantities.
Right.
I second that, but also let me add that the system of units notion is so important. But I think it actually has to be in the ontology.
That's what I'm saying, and I'm saying if you do that, it actually gives a natural way even to break things apart into modular boundaries. After all, there is an international system of quantities along with an international system of units.
Indeed. However, we still have the problem of how to modularize, if we do it at all, what you might call the upper-level ontology that defines these notions. I shouldn't have said that word. Which I think is what we've really been discussing. But I think it's okay. We've got that the wording settled now, and we can basically do it in wordsmith. We can wordsmith it out, and also in practice we can modularize it in order for it to be as elegant as possible. Go on.
Can you hear me now?
Can you tell me what is the plan?
Conference.
Good question.
Are
you adding anything to Charter Howard?
I was testing.
Oh, no, I'm just throwing the words every now and then. He's actually done all the work on the barn.
That's quite so good.
Did you finish?
If you people deliver it, I can do it in the week of the 16th. You might have an SC4 meeting starting in Rotterdam one day after I get back from the US. So I'm going to be a bit tight for resources until the
16th. I'm not sure you want to do it that way. I figured that what I was going to be doing was adding comments.
We'll take it either way because I can always track back what you changed. Apart from that, what resources do we have on this?
I assume the interested parties will read and comment if they get a chance between now and November.
And the resources for actually doing the work.
Yeah, well, we do have identified people, right? We have.
So you will be identifying the members who will actually be.
There is a problem. I mean, what we've established is that there are a lot of interested parties who are apparently not OASIS members. And one of the questions is how we go about that.
My problem appears to be resolved, because it does appear that LBL is a member. I actually work for LBL. All I have to do is find out who the LBL technical contact is and have him authorize me to be on this committee and support this.
So act now and after later.
But I'm trying not to alienate these people.
But quadrant is that I don't know who the name is.
No, I need to talk to Paul or find out if
the JPL,
the short version. On that one, I don't know. There is a way we walk the trees to figure that one out. The short version, though, is get people who are immediately ready to, and if you say yes, to say yes. And then we'll go talk to the others and see if we can work out with them.
No, I don't
foresee a problem with LBL. And actually, might add, honestly, that, you know, usually, in the case of any rational economic actor, it's a time commitment that's expensive part. I mean, we're not going to be reasonable at our rate. No. Then when your guys are 2 days, you've already blown twice your budget.
I just had one query come in on the blog saying, why restricted to quantities and units?
What else do you want?
Not to mention,
those are going to be on the list. I mean,
we need a title.
I see. You want a title to include dimensions because QUDT and QUDV and QUDX all have QUV.
I think we can respond on that we note that dimensions are in the scope and we have not extended the title to include all the words in the scope.
Correct.
That's a big problem I always have in the SC4 environment, because everybody wants their piece in the title.
So, okay.
Yeah. Okay, it's 3:30.
Quite late. Returned.
Are there any other items of business that we wish to discuss? If not, I'd like to thank everybody for their constructive contributions. I think we've aired a fair number of issues today, which will play back into the revised charter and give the TC some work to do when it finally convenes in January. And we look forward to getting lots of support when this goes out for public review, public comment, towards the back end of November, with a view to a teleconference being hosted in January. We'll set the date for that. The number of people might just get the hump if you did that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all those who dialed in from Europe and hung on the phone this long, and apologies for the challenges earlier on. But I think now gives me some pleasure to declare this meeting adjourned.
Okay.